Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm Ron McKeefrey, and I'm very excited. Don't really need an introduction for our next guest on the show today, but Coach Louis Simmons from Westside Barbell. He's the owner of Westside Barbell. He's trained 25 plus world or national champions in the sport of powerlifting. He's an elite champion powerlifter himself, setting many records over the age of 50. Just shows you how impressive he is. He's probably the best thing about Coach is that he is very gracious with his time and his knowledge, and he did not shy away from giving us any information in this episode today. So I want to get straight to it. Real quick before we do, I want to give some love to Play Sports Performance Flooring for being the sole sponsor of Iron Game Chalk Talk. They're doing some great installs. Most recent one here at Boise State. Did a phenomenal job of incorporating some turf along with some flooring, putting in really getting an opportunity to work in some first class facilities, and they're delivering every time. And so, if you're building a facility, make sure you reach out to Brett or Angelo there and check them out, because I mean, these things are turning out great every time. So. Sit back, enjoy this episode of Coach Louis Simmons. I know you're going to take quite a few pieces of information away. All right, guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm very excited about our guest today. Coach Louis Simmons is obviously one of the godfathers of our deal. Fantastic person. I've studied him from afar. A lot of my coaches that have worked for me have gone and visited him personally, and he's always been open and gracious with them. And so, Coach, I truly appreciate you coming on and sharing a little bit of knowledge with everybody.
My pleasure.
Hey, Coach, you know, can you go into a little bit of, you know, how you even got into the field in the first place as a lifter, and then, you know, that natural progression into coaching? And why, you know, why is it such a passion to you, and maybe some of the mentors that you've had along the way?
Okay, well, basically to start with, when I was a small child, I wanted to be strong. I was small, and I got in a lot of fights and everything. So I got my first weight set at 12 years old and trained for 2 years and started competing. At 14, I cleaned for 260 and the 148s. And I did, you know, it wasn't a powerlifting. I did a 475 deadlift at the same body weight.
Wow.
And I started out actually as a block tender during summer vacations, and I actually worked for the gentleman after work, after school, when I was 14 years old, actually for several years. So I did manual labor when I was a child, and that basically supplied me with the rule of three that the old Soviet Union had, where I had a general physical preparedness training. Now, I was physically fit to do anything. That's what fitness is, able to do everyday tasks. So that's how I started. And then I went to my first power meet in 1966. I was going to be drafted into the military in October, and this was just slightly before that. And I went to that power meet, and I'd never seen anything like it. The guys were 10 times stronger than Olympic weightlifters, and I was fascinated. There was no science behind it. There was four would-be world champions to come out of that.
Wow.
Larry Pacifico, Vince Anello, Melt McKinney, and George Crawford. And so they were in the early part of my mentorship. And then when I went into the Army in 66 and started reading about the old Westside Barbell Club, because at 14 I had a 410 squat. Olympic style, I could out-squat any a male in Columbus, Ohio.
Wow.
But at 19, I still had a 410 squat. So I started box squatting, like he recommended. In 3 months, I squatted 450. And 2 years later, I did 630 at 180-pound body weight in a contest, 670 deadlift. Took my deadlift from 5 1/4 to 670. Just finished 7 with a 390 bench.
Wow.
I was much stronger than that, but I knew nothing about periodization at the time. All right. Slightly after that, I thought my back was indestructible, and I broke it doing good mornings. So I was on crutches basically on and off for 10 months, and no one was getting me repaired. So I just, by my imagination, came up with a reverse hyperextension exercise. I put a couple boards up in a power rack. This was late 1973. Jumped up on there, hung my legs downward, just traction, and did the exercise, raised my feet to the rear, no pain for first time in almost a year, and it pumped up my back.
Wow.
And so little did I realize it was going to not rehab me, but get me back on my feet to train again. So by 1977, I was pulling 710 at 195 in contests.
Wow.
All right, then moving on, I broke my back again in 1981. I didn't have a diagnosis till late 82. But I knew something was wrong with my training. I mean, here I've got two broken lower backs, L5s, and the doctor won't take out two discs, fuse my back, take off some bones. I said, I'm not doing that. This is the second time. And I said, there's got to be a better way to train. So I got a hold of Butch Connigan in Michigan and started getting all of his books. And they were about weight. He told me, he said, you know, these are classroom books. And I said, exactly what I need. I need to learn about my own sport. Right. And here in America, the term sports science, you get a degree, there's no such thing. There's no connection between sports and science.
Agreed.
So the Russians had that. You had scientists working with top athletes. And so in 1982, I got all these books. The first thing I did, I started using a Prelims chart. Yep. I never had any idea why you do so many repetitions, at what percentage or how many total lifts in a workout. And now that's the foundation of our success, periodization. Now, years ago, you know, we used to basically do long-term block periodization, Western periodization. It's a total dead end. You build muscle, you work on power, you work on strength. Block one will carry to block two. Block one will never carry to block three.
Right.
It's impossible. You have detraining. And so I came up with a system in 1982, of a three-week wave system, where I go from 50% to 60% in a three-week wave. Nowadays, and back then, Fred Hatfield talked about CAT, compensatory acceleration training. In theory, it's a great idea. With lightweight, it has to be done. But in the real world, if you don't have bands or chains attached to the bar, you have tremendous bar deceleration. So when I started using bands or chains in the late 80s and bands in the early 90s, it changed all that. So if you look at the graphs that are held by the Soviets based on 780 high-skilled weightlifters, America has zero. So I went off their charts. And 50% of their training for speed strength is from 75 to 85%. So when I use 50 to 60 on a box, now this is for a contest, for us going to a contest, I add 25% band tension for speed strength. So the 50 turns into 75 and the 60 turns into 85. Right. If that research is good enough for them, it's good enough for me. And it's produced 19 people over 1,000. Our lightest is 198. Wow. We have two 1,200-pound squatters. I have a woman that squats 770 at 165. That? 148 does 590. Well, 32 did 540.
Jeez.
But that's how this all started, following the Soviets. Verkhoshansky, Medvedev, Zasazorsky, Roman, Kremlin. He was the main source that got me on the road. And I've been lucky. If you ask about my mentors, those authors were my mentors.
Right, right.
And I had no one here to tell me anything. And, you know, 1992, when Practice Science and Strength Training came out, Zasazorsky's great publication, I knew that I was pretty much on track.
Right.
Because everything he does is exactly what, you know, I do. Okay.
With working with as a lifter, it started all as a lifter and then progressing into coaching. What drives you the passion of coaching? You know, you could easily have your two or three lifting partners and call it a day, but you've done so much for the profession and for the field and for the sport. Where does that passion come from?
I haven't lost it yet. You know, the gym is my life, and I trained Kevin Randall, who's UFC heavyweight champion. I trained two Olympic gold medal sprinters. Mo Robson, female. Butch Reynolds, male. Trained the 70-10 shot putters, still a high state record almost 30 years later. I took a Big Ten indoor sprint champion, George Nicholas. His dream was to qualify for the Olympics, and of course, in the 100. And he ran 10:47, and a high state track coach at the time said, George will never run faster. I said, George, come to me, I'll make you run faster. I had him 9 weeks, and he ran 10:17.
Wow.
Power. People in America, in the world of strength training, you print the world strength. You know, I used to hear about NFL ballplayers. These players are so fast. Hell with all that fast stuff. I know about that. Well, then I started going to camps. I went up to the Browns a lot, Buddy Morris a lot, and I was with Kent Johnson a lot, Seattle Seahawks, and Green Bay Packers. Well, I found out these guys can move. I had no idea how fast these players were.
Yeah, they're impressive.
And I admit it. I totally admit it. But I don't think people understand what tremendous strength does when it's trained at the proper velocities.
Right.
People think weights are heavy and light. They are not. Because if that was true, a lightweight to you, if you have a daughter, it'd be extremely heavy to your daughter. It's the same weight, so that's impossible.
Right.
Strength's measured in velocities. Explosive strength is fast velocity. Speed, strength, intermediate. Strength, speed, slow. Isometric, of course, would be zero. So people have to understand that you have to train strengths and velocities. I've had people come to me and say, I'm a speed strength coach. I asked him what velocity that's trained at. They don't know. So how could they possibly be his featuring
there? Right.
It's impossible.
That's a great
People
point.
Think that Olympic weightlifting builds explosive power. It does not build explosive power. Jumping builds explosive power. If you look at Dr. Verfishansky, and all of his publications, his theory is jumping, bounding, and depth jumps.
Yep.
And he did it. So there's no Olympic lifting in there. We do a lot. I had a fellow here, 265 pounds on his back, jump up to his feet off his knees.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
One jump off his knees onto a 34-inch box. That's explosive power.
No doubt.
Our box record for jumping on a box is 63.5 inches by an intern.
Holy cow.
Okay, so, and it's all a result of what I do. And Dr., I used to do seminars with Mel Siff.
Yep.
Before he died, was at Super Training. We did seminars together because Mel was so science, he basically let people in the dust. They didn't know what he was talking about. But Mel told me that I'm the only one to use mechanical power. Where Verfishansky's theory on jumping was massive weights, 90% mostly, very heavy, very slow, building absolute strength.
Yep.
On the other end, he jumped for explosive power. But what he did was he left out speed strength weights.
Right. Right.
And that's what I did. If there's three types of velocities, you must train them all. Okay. If I got a car, it's got three gears, why would I use two of them?
Absolutely.
So when I started using the third, mechanical power, the velocity of mechanical power is one-third of maximum velocity. So that's why our speed squatting is basically around 0.8, 0.9 meters.
Right.
If you measure a person's velocity jumping on a box, it's about one-third of that.
No doubt. You know, one of the things that I try to do with this show is to get originators of concepts or the leaders of a concept. And, I know with you, you mentioned you going and you visited, the Browns and the Seahawks. And I know for a fact that you get out and see as many programs, you travel the world. When you travel these places and you see conjugate or what people consider conjugate training, I always think that you probably cringe a little bit at what some people are doing and calling it conjugate training. Could you give a kind of a global, I know it could be a whole day seminar on what conjugate training is, but can you give a global definition? And then, what are the common mistakes that you're seeing, especially in the athletic arena, the sport, sports strength coaches, that the mistakes that they're making trying to implement conjugate training?
Okay, first of all, conjugate had its official name in 1972 by the Dynamo Club in the Soviet Union. You may know that.
Yep.
Verfishansky's part of that. It came from track and field and weightlifting. See, all my method, I've never traveled, by the way. I refuse to travel. I won't leave the United States. But I'm highly read, and I have people all over the world come see me.
Sure.
Including the Olympic team doctor of the Bulgarian weightlifting team. People like this.
Right.
East German biomechanics experts in the shop. So I've had a lot of experience in the time when we had these great talks. And physics. My friend is a physics professor, a mathematics professor. Weight training is mathematics, physics, and biomechanics.
Yeah.
That's what it really breaks down to. Now, back to your question. You're right. People don't understand the conjugate system. Basically, conjugate means connected. So I'll give you just some examples on speed then. I'll just say this briefly, then I'll explain it.
Sure.
People think conjugate is by rotating exercises.
Right.
That's part of it. That's only a small part. You also have to rotate intensities and volume and bar speeds, velocities. You have to change everything. Everything's a conjugate. A boxer throws punches in combinations, that's conjugate. A football, if you run 20 yards on the first play of the game, you can't just keep running the same play. You got to change.
That's right.
You go back 10 plays later, same play works again. That's conjugate. So basically, conjugate training for a three-week cycle for us. In 3 weeks, I used the same one. Mel asked me how I came up with this. It was the same. He told me the same one Alexis used, and he came up with this too. After 3 weeks, I got no stronger. I didn't get any faster. So I wave up for three and go back. But when we go up for three, 50, 55, 60 with 25% on top of that for speed strength, and that's 80 lifts a month for us and 12 max effort. A lot of people think it would be reversed. Okay, but it's not. You concentrate on fast rate of force development. You have to display it. You can hamstring, but you have to display it.
Sure.
So we go up for 3 weeks. On the fourth week, we weigh back to the 50, but we either change a bar or change some type of band tension or change. Okay? So that's how we keep from a law of accommodation.
Right.
You have to constantly switch. Your brain has to constantly learn things. If it doesn't, you don't get any better.
Right.
So that's how we work that. And then small exercises is, and remember what I said about the survey. you know, 50% of speed strength for the greatest weightlifters in the world trained at 75 to 85%. That's exactly what I do. And the bar speed average about 0.8 meters per second. I test this on 20 people squat over 800. I'm sorry, 850. Okay, so I have people I can do tests that no one else can do. I have the strongest woman in the world, pound for pound, Dave Hall, 2960 at 275. And Laura Phelps, 1800 at 165.
Wow.
All right, the greatest 1190-pound squat, the greatest squat pound for pound, Dave Hall squat. So, and he broke Chuck Vogelpohl's squat, who previously trained here. So we broke well over 100 records in my sport,
right,
and that's all I'm truly responsible for.
No,
you know, I work with other sports, and I'm big in MMA now. anyhow, to carry on, we rotate, because Tudor Bumper told me one time, oh, I'll explain, like, I want to show you some volumes, and this is pertaining to ball players, we'll say, high school to college.
Okay.
A 400-pound squatter training at 50 to 60%, the volume would be 4,800 pounds.
Okay.
12 doubles at 240, which is, you know, 60%, is 4,800. All right, times 10 is 4,800. We'll just jump up to 500. And I'll explain why this is important.
Sure.
Our 500-pound squatter, his volume is 6,000. He would train from 250 to 300. The 300 would be 10 doubles,
yep,
and that's 6,000 pounds volume. All right? A 600-pound squatter would train from 3 to 360, and the 360 times 10 is 72, or 7,200 pounds of volume. Why is this important? Because it's for two reasons. I got a high school team, and I wanted to have the force of a 600-pound squatter. I don't have to have them squat 600. They have to train with 300 to 360 with maximum velocity.
Right.
And no one could do that. If you're a 600-pound squatter, you do it one time. If I train at these velocities, I'm doing it 20 times. 20 lifts. I'm hitting you 20 times, you hit me one time. Who's
right.
going to survive?
Right, right.
So, and as people make a huge mistake, as bar, they think as you get stronger, you get slower. This is ludicrous if you follow my mathematical formula here.
Right.
Because all these weights, if you were in my gym, you'll see girls that squat 415, 60. One of them weighs 124 pounds. These are my average girls. Okay? Their volume, well, their bar speed is 0.8. If you go on the other side where Dave Hall's trained with 1,200, 1,150 squatters, AJ Roberts, 1,205, their bar speed is exactly the same at the same percent.
Really?
So that's right. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, see, so that way, as I get stronger, me don't lose speed.
It's crazy.
Everything's at 0.8 meters per second. That's why strength's measured in velocity, not weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Zasatorsky talks about a shot putter as if he threw 50 feet and he benched 440. If he benched 550, he may not throw farther. True in your Western periodization, but if you follow my system, you would throw farther. I had a 70-10 shot to prove it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, see, the bar speeds, like if you're a 600 squatter and I'm an 800 squatter, you're 60%, my 60% at the very same speed. So I'm producing much more force than you are because I am stronger,
sure,
using the same bar velocity.
Sure.
Okay. And, carrying on with the conjugate system, then after that, for us, it's, I hear the word posterior chain in sports. I don't train guys doing the field anymore because they don't have a posterior chain. They all come here, they're all weak as hell. They have no hamstring, glute, and hips.
Yeah.
Strong quads, and that's it.
Right.
And so what you do is you rotate your exercise, glute hams, inverse curl, heavy, lots of reverse hypers. And I'll explain how I train football and why, and that's one of your questions. I'll explain it.
Yeah.
But we build the posterior chain. You cannot do high repetitions in a multi-joint exercise because the weakest part of your body will give out. Lower back, hamstring, okay? So we don't do that. We do all the work in one precise area. Like, I'll give you one example. I have a 1080 squatter. His squat program is 12,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
His reverse hypers is 45,000 pounds in that one workout.
Really?
That's right. My girls that squat 5,400, their reverse hypers is 26,000 pounds. That's the key. And no one considers it.
Sure.
80. I have a stat person here. You know, the Russians always had stats. I have a lot of interns, so I have one for 2 years who kept stats. And our stats are 20% barbell, bench squat, deadlift. We train at 40% for speed bench, and we all box squat. We never do any regular squatting, and we never deadlift off the floor. I got 20 over 800 deadlifts.
Wow.
But 20% barbell lifts, 80% spatial exercise.
Really?
That's right. And that's the key. If you look at Soviet, you know, everybody talks about the Bulgarians. Even Nam Suleiman did 35% spatial exercise.
Right.
They'll lead you to think he did none. I don't know where these guys are coming from. Dan Tulk's a famous weightlifter, late 60s, did 90% spatial, 10% Olympic lifting.
Wow. Wow.
Once you learn it, you learn it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. You know, you mentioned talking specifically about training athletes. You know, with all the rules with the NCAA or even the NFL, I mean, we in the NFL, we have a 9-week off season.
Can I explain it? The max effort day?
Yes, sir. Please do.
Okay. On max effort day, which has to be done 72 hours later.
Yeah.
All right. You probably read this. Extreme work has 72 hours. And that's why we train at 8 and at 5.
Yep.
Every 12 or 24, you do small workout. All right. Well, on 72 hours later, we'll come in, we'll max out. Never on a squat, bench, or deadlift. It's always like a floor press, a board press, a band press, a chain press. You know, a low box squat, a good morning, stand on a box, in the power rack, bands over the bar, something. Never ever the real lifts. Okay, now science has told us, and it's very true. Remember what I said about the 3 weeks? I found out years ago. I didn't know how to fix it. You train at a weight with 90% or above for 3 weeks ago, you will go backwards. Your central nervous system will shut down.
Yep.
So what we do, we train at 100. I have a 95% success rate breaking a spatial exercise for the entire gym. Each week we switch spatial exercise.
Really?
We never run into the 3 weeks. And the more things, you know, you being an athlete, you just can't do, you know, if you're a basketball, you just can't dribble. You just can't shoot. You just can't defend. You can't, you know, you have to be able to do everything. You have to be a ball player to do everything, right?
Right.
Football player included or anybody. So the more exercise we do, the greater we come at one exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the conjugate system, by training the muscles, like I told you, to 80%, like if you got a weak lower back, you're just stopped. You're not getting stronger. Your lower back, I'll blow up your lower back, and then your squat continues. Now we break. Now your good muscles, the stronger muscles, allow it to take over and do what they're supposed to.
Right.
Okay, so anyhow, that's how great the volume is. Now, I just mentioned a fellow that his squat workouts like normally 12,000 pounds at least. Okay, and that's what the training was.
Right.
All right, he's a 346-pound guy. A year and 3 months ago, he had a 700-pound deadlift when he came here. A year and 3 months later, he pulls 800 stand on a 2-inch box.
Wow.
And that workout, remember the 12,000 pounds?
Yep.
The high volume, moderate intensity.
Yep.
All right, 72 hours later, when he pulled 800, no, not counting any small warm-ups, he did 525 for one, 615 for one, so you're talking 1,100,
mm-hmm.
705 for one, you're talking 1,800 and 800.
Wow.
He did 2,500 pounds work, got a 35-pound record, moves on to spatial exercises.
Wow.
Don't let exercise get the most out of you. You want to get the most out of it.
Right.
So you see, high volume, moderate intensity, low volume, maximum intensity, and we break our record over 95% of the time. Then back into the spatial exercises. And then, you know, like I got two girls, one stocky, super built, and power clean is 205 and 132. All right, just give you an example.
Right.
And I got a tall girl, 5'6", 124. She squats 460, air does 450. When they do reverse hypers, the short ones, the glutes blow up, the other ones find a record blow up.
Yeah.
But they know that, so they want to do it.
Sure.
And we do lots of space, you're walking in a bell squat and stuff like this. Okay, so is that, you pretty much understand,
you know,
content? Because it's everything has to change, not just exercise.
No doubt. When you change from week to week, how many weeks will you go before you come back to that, say that board, you know, 3-board press or whatever, so that they know that there's a progression?
Okay, I'm guessing about every 3 or 4 weeks.
Every 3 or 4 weeks.
How do I know a training's going well? I told you, break it 95. If we miss something, we miss a 2-board, you miss a floor press, you miss an incline, something's wrong with our training, see?
I
know every week. With my system, if I got you in my gym, you're training 50 to 60, I'm watching you. I know how fast you are every week.
Right.
I don't have to find out 12 weeks you're slower than hell.
Right.
I want you max out every week. I know, is this guy strong or is this guy weak?
Right, sure.
And every week I look at you as a coach and I say, this guy has no hamstrings. You know, he's got no triceps. He's got no upper back. Whatever the hell you need, see? We can monitor that week by week by week so we don't get into a deficit training like, oh, my God, what do I do with this kid now?
Right.
You know, he's supposed to be running 4.6. He's running 5.2.
So when you're training these athletes in the gym, you know, versus your power lifters, how much of your programming changes? Or the other question, really kind of what I'm really wanting to get to is, with all the limitations that are put on strength coaches at the college and pro level, what would your 8-week program kind of look like? You know, number of days, you know, breakdown as far as, you know, the 8-hour rule, the 20-hour rule, those types of things.
Okay. Basically, in season, I wouldn't have the players max out because I think football is too strenuous. Football is practiced the most hours, played the least amount of minutes, and the most amount of mistakes I've ever seen.
I'd agree with
in
that.
In a ratio of any other sport. If it was boxing, it'd be knocked out in the first round.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, I think maybe they train too much. But, you know, you're always, coaches always about time restraints, right? Time restraint. How can I do my players like this?
Right.
Have you ever seen my explosive power DVD?
I've watched some of it, yes, sir.
Okay, if you watch, I have Phil Harrington. Now, they're exceptional. Phil Harrington, 900 squat at 181. Laura Phelps, 770, 165. Yep. But if you watch them, what is football? 40-second rest, 47-second play. Laura and Phil, back-to-back, did 10 doubles. Laura used 330 and 140-pound abandons, 470 at the top. And Phil used 420 and 140-pound band for 10 doubles every 40 seconds. And then within 30 seconds, they had to pull six doubles in the sumo deadlift, and I'll explain that.
Right.
Laura used 275, and Phil used 50 more with 220-pound band. That's 16 plays.
Yeah.
That's less than 16 minutes. I don't know how long you got.
Yeah.
Now, you just work these, and most of your ball players are going to take about two freaking warm-ups, and they're into their training sets.
Right.
Am I right? They're not squatting 800. They're squatting 4 and 5 and 6.
Right.
Okay. So, like I said, you're talking 16 sets every 40 seconds and 30 seconds. Come on. And then you've got at least a half hour to work on special exercise.
Yeah.
And then you send them out of there. Okay, that's one part. You understand that?
Yep.
And absolutely. It's the same thing, 50 to 60. It works. I've done it with ball players. They brought me in the first guy I ever had, they brought from Oklahoma State, fifth year senior, big kid, 6'5", 295 pounds. I got him 21 days. And I got to get him, say he ran 5'4", 40, got to get him run faster. And I'll tell you how I did it. And I'll tell you, that's the beginning and the outstanding. So I take him, and in 21 days, he weighs 308 and around 5'140 in Indianapolis.
Wow.
It's a joke. Big men have small, their relative strength is low. They can't do 40 chin-ups like a little guy.
Right.
So you have to raise your absolute strength.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so I do that. I follow the same procedure I just showed you, just football specific. It's also like hockey. Hockey's like football, more sprinting, less contact.
Sure.
Okay, so I make him do the fast sets. Then if I feel they're weak, in the posterior chain, it's power walking with the sled. If I feel they need condition, it's prowler.
Right.
10-second prowler, 40-second rest. All right? Then, of course, they got to do reverse hypers. But, dude, I'm talking 45 minutes, they're out the door.
Right.
Because they play football. I'm not trying to make a power lifter out of a football player. And a lot of people always say, they call me a power lift coach because that's what I guess. But what I believe I am, and I mean, I'm a spacious strength coach.
Yeah.
That's what I am.
No,
I can look at you and I realize what strength you lack, and then I build it. Big guys normally lack absolute strength.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyhow, I told you 21 days. They brought I had a kid for 2 months here. They brought him in, Parker, tells his name. He got 4 Super Bowl rings. I want to say Buddy Parker. That's not it. What the hell's his name? He spent 2 months with me.
Okay.
Johnny Parker.
Oh, Johnny Parker.
He's got 4 Super Bowl rings.
Yeah.
It brought me a tight end from Ohio U, 292 pounds. He ran 5.140. Said, knock a tenth off, he'll make a lot of money. Johnny's here, said, this kid will play both ways, make a lot of money. I got him 2 months, he ran 4.77 at the same 292. His long jump of 8.9 to 9.8.
Wow.
Trained the very same way. The difference between what I do with a power lifter and what I do with a football player is the jumps.
Yeah.
Jumps
yeah.
is like Bert Frischowski's right. That's how you build explosive power. And my regiment is, now if you read about his depth jumps, the top flight guys, four sets of 10, intermediate, 3 sets of 8. I follow the same thing, but I normally do 2 sets, 240 jumps a week. And you can do them anytime, before you work out, after you work out. I'll give you a bit of an idea of a heptathlon girl. But normally I use weights. I use ankle weights, weight vests, and kettlebells. The combination is all 3. You establish a record on a 30, you establish a record on a 40, and I do a lot of contrast training. I would have you warm up with 10-pound ankle weights and 30-pound kettlebells. You know, in a record box that you got with the kettlebells,
right.
You know, let's say it's 40 inches. I warm you up to 30, take off the ankle weights. Invariably, you break your record. Contrast.
Do you stay 30 and 40 for those big guys, those big linemen as well?
You mean amount of jumps?
No, I'm talking
height?
Box heights, yeah.
Height is relative, how high they can jump. Some can jump and some can't.
Right.
I mean, I had a ball player here who jumped 63. He's playing Canadian football.
Sure.
He was he's 6'2" and 225 pounds.
Right. You know, you talk a lot about, I've heard you speak before on preventing injury, and obviously in the sport of powerlifting, there's, you're beating you beat your body to hell. It seems like a lot of, you know, using a lot of the of those principles with athletes. What I know, you know, you invented, you know, which was very innovative, the reverse hyper. What are some of the things that you do from a preventative standpoint with your sport athletes?
Okay, sport and
And powerlifting.
Traction. I have invert cable. Okay. I also have traction machine that tilts and electric.
Okay.
Traction on the spine. Traction for the knees, the hips, and ankles. Wearing ankle weights. I have therapists and doctors call me how to fix people. And about one third of my calls is medical.
Really?
Yeah. And you got a kid that's got sore knees, sore hip, put 10-pound ankle weights on them, make them walk around like in a bench workout. You don't even know they're on there.
Yeah.
And watch what happens. It cures all that.
Really?
The sled GPP, the sled pulling. I do lots of high rep stuff. Like, they'll watch my people. I got this from a high jump record holder. We do 200 leg curls a day with 10 or 20-pound ankle weights. Yeah. I'm talking 1,000-pound squatters, 800 deadlifters, and they say, well, what can that possibly do? It thickens ligaments and tendons. That's where the connective tissues are.
Agreed.
The thicker the connective tissue, the more powerful you are.
I agree.
Okay, so that's why I do it. 300 tricep pushdowns outside the gym. Elbow prevention.
Yep.
Okay, the ankle weights. Of course, you do tons and tons of retard amount of reverse hypers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's way over 100,000 pounds for the big guys a week.
Really?
That's right. Remember that kid, he does 46,000.
Yep.
He does that twice, plus he does them on the two bench days. Comes in, like we come in, you might put 250 on, do a set of 30, just distraction on your phone.
Right.
And a problem in America I see, that I mean, literally, some of the greatest coaches have to train the youth. That's where you learn flexibility, mobility, dexterity, hand and eye coordination, reaction time. So you need a great coach that understands that.
Yep.
And over in the Soviet Union, they did that.
No doubt.
I mean, I know guys, I have a 3-time world champion wrestler here from Cuba. You know, we had these huge discussions. And I was also two-time Brazilian jiu-jitsu champion, too.
Right.
And the guy you might have heard a minute ago, Carlos Carvela, he just won the European and the Roman championships in the gi and no gi.
Really?
That's the kind of work of Matt Brown, 5 straight UFC finishes.
Yeah.
Okay. Eddie Weiland will be here Friday morning, the 135 going to fight Morale.
Really?
So I work from explosive strength to 25-minute fights.
Yep.
And we do it all different. If you come, you know, it's too complex for me to just tell you now.
Sure,
but
sure.
That's how we do it. But this is how we do injury. And also, listen, chiropractic. I'm huge on chiropractic. Also, atlas adjustments. All ball players, you know, when a person gets knocked out, the atlas gets moved over, and that's what causes the knockout.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of getting hit.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of ART. I got a very good ART guy here. Rolfing. I've had lots of rolfing done. Electric stim. You probably heard of arc wave. It actually lengthens the muscle.
Yep.
Okay. This is and good nutrition. I won't get into nutrition, even though I have my own nutrition.
Right. Sure.
It's protein, you know. Absolutely. You're limited by that for sure. I know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It seems crazy. But yeah.
It is. It is. Well, you know, it seems like you got a lot of specialists that come in. On your staff to come in and work with the guys. And I think that's important, having that team to help prevent those injuries.
I won't say who, but a coach called me and said they're having all kind of cramp problems. It just has to be said here. I told him to go to the farmer, please, and buy horse electrolytes.
Yeah.
And you just put a teaspoon in water. You don't have any electrolyte problems.
Yeah. That's interesting.
If you have people to very, very explosive people about to have lactic acid problems, right?
Right.
Have them take a half a teaspoon of baking soda and an ounce of water.
Really?
And then yes. Try it yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
It's baking soda.
Well, you know, I'm always trying weird things. One of the things that I've always been impressed with by you and just studying you from afar has been your creativity. You know, everything from... I think a lot of that stems from the mentors that you've had and the research and the reading that you have, I'm sure you'll talk about, but where does that really come from? I mean, I don't think you stay at the top of your game as an athlete or the top of your game as a coach without some sort of creativity, entrepreneurial type of spirit, you know, to where you're constantly challenging yourself.
Well, I think it all started when I got out of the Army, you know, beginning of 70, I trained by myself for 5 years. And I was top 4 in the world training by myself with no training partner. I had a mirror and a radio. Well, we don't have any mirrors in the gym now, you know.
Yeah.
But I had to have somebody moving around. It was just me.
Yeah.
And I realized I can't go in bench, squat, and deadlift or power clean.
Yeah.
is you drive me insane.
Right.
I started doing, you know, pin 1, 2, 3 rack pulls, high box, low box, very low box, wide stance, close stance, floor press, board press. I got all this in the Westside Barbell Club, and it kept me in your power cleans with close grip and wide grip. You know, seat, everything I switched all the time. And because it kept me from boredom, I didn't realize that I was defeating a law of accommodation. Never heard of the law of accommodation.
Right, right.
But that's what I was doing. And so then it went on and on because all of a sudden, and I had responsibilities because they heard about me and no powerlifting news, and then powerlifting USA before it went under. So people would move here to Columbus and going to Ohio State start to train me. So now I don't have to worry about just my career. I had to worry about theirs as well.
Right. Right.
And so our first world record holder is 1984. We were team champions in 1980. I have the strongest gym in the world.
Right.
The top five totals, we had three.
Wow.
I trained Donnie Thomas, who's got number one.
Yeah.
And Ranson in Finland, my buddy Sakari, trains him. And it's you know, it's not a coincidence. It's a system. I have a system.
Sure.
And if it's, we're constantly working on it, but it's foolproof.
Well, it's obviously very, very successful. What, you know,
can I say one thing?
Yeah.
Truly, see, I mean, you go in 8 weeks, like you got football season. I understand that. I train, and I don't even train Olympic cycles, but I train in multi-year cycles. When I brought the gentleman in, I told you I had a 700 gather and pulled 800 on a box,
right?
You know, in a year and 3 months. Okay. I said, when you come here, you're a 3-year project. He went in 1 year and 2 months, he went from 2,400 to 2,730.
Wow.
I had five people over 27. No gym world has two.
Wow.
Okay. Then secondly, my AJ Roberts came here for 2,400 total. And this is strong guys. Strong and stuck. In 3.5 years, he totaled 2,855, broke three total world records. Mm-hmm. So it's the system. And every person I bring in, they help make it easier for the next group of guys, just like he did.
So sure.
You got a lot of ball players. You see common mistakes, so you eliminate the mistakes before it becomes a problem, right?
Yep. Instead of one. Yep.
You got a big advantage. I got a big advantage over you because when I bring a person in, one or two, and that's it. It's a private gym. You come in, you make it, and you're gone.
Right.
And we have you try it. So I take one or two guys. He's in with five, six, or seven freaking super strong guys that know how to train.
Right.
And so they train him. A lot of people think I guide everything. I don't. I guide all the math.
Yep.
I expect you to figure out how to learn. You know, you figure your boys got to catch and they got to run, right? And they
yep.
got to tackle.
Yep.
Okay. So when they come here, I teach them to actually coach. And I think that's a lot of success.
Yep.
And if you get around a lot of the fighters, I'm around a lot of fighters here, they always told me, and it made sense because it that's what I did. When I had to solve their problems, it made me solve my own problems.
Sure.
That's what the fighters said. They never realized until they actually started training some other fighters that they solved problems in men that they actually had themselves.
Well, that's so important. No, there's no doubt. I make the comment all the time that to our athletes that you know, every time they cross that sideline, they leave their coaches on the sideline. So they have to go out there and they have to make those decisions and they have to,
sure.
to navigate those that environment. So I couldn't agree more with that. You know, it brings another question just off the top of my head there. One thing that I struggle with especially in the college setting is, you know, you get a freshman untrained from different training backgrounds versus your senior that would have been in your program for 4 years. You know, when a new lifter comes in, obviously they're elite or they wouldn't be there, but there is a difference between that lifter and your elite guys. You know, do you throw them right in with those guys or do you keep them separate or how's that culture?
Okay. I've had a lot of people say that you can't use consciousness with a new person. Well, of course you can because that's what GPP is.
Right.
Okay. I started Kenny Parrish at 14 years old. At 20, he was open world record holder in the bench, the youngest ever. I started Joe McCoy at 15 years old. He was open world champion at 19 years old. I started Dave Hoff at 15 years old, competing early, only 16. Dave's the only team to squat 1,000 as a teenager. He's the youngest still to 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. This is all math.
Right.
I can bring in my gym and split in two. That size the girl size, I just say. You know, I got them on monolith, the power rack, to keep them over there. You know, that's where all the height, that's where all the machines are, but we get strong on. The girls train, if you come in my gym and you look at these girls, you're seeing them do exactly what them guys are. 120-pound girls, 350-pound guys. They're doing Training's training.
Right.
There's
right.
no difference. Right. And it's based on math. You teach them technique, biomechanics. Learn physics, lower barbells fast. I want to get into that. And then, you know, mathematics. Right. If you squat 400, you got to train for 2 to 240. When you, if you could do 8, you train from 4 to 480.
Sure.
And you're, like, I would just say you're to 800. And me and you is going to collide on a football field. Well, you're training with 480, moving 0.8 meters a second, and I can do 240. You're knocking me on my butt.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But I hope you understand this and all your readers. That's why this system works for sports. If it didn't, I wouldn't have fighters here telling me what it's doing to them.
Right.
You get a fighter slower, I mean, you'll go to sleep in the first round.
You're right.
And here's the thing. I got a couple comments. I watch a lot of coaches who read a freaking book. You know, it's like the book of the club, book of the week, month club. They read it and they go out and try it. Next week they try something else. They never really get in, experiment. You know, a coach ought to make people faster, stronger, and jump higher throughout their career.
Sure.
I mean, and you can't just be where he was in 1995. I see a lot of people lower weight stuff. You should never lower weight stuff. I discussed this with Dr. Romanoff of Pose. He's a good friend of mine.
Yep.
And he came over here, and he couldn't believe. He thought he was in the Soviet Union. His son said he's never seen his father as happy as when he comes here. And because what we do is this is what they did.
Yeah.
You know, everyone knows depth jumps work. There's no one is ever going to argue the fact, right?
Right.
And you're moving at 9.8 meters per second. That's the speed of acceleration gravity to Earth. If you know they work, why would you lower weight slow?
Sure.
It doesn't make any sense. If I take a barbell, I use up 40%, you know, when you fight, you can't fight. You fight, got his hands up and he's relaxed, he can fight. That's where the power comes from. Relax, overcome by dynamic. So if you drop a ball, for instance, well, use 40% of that. I did experiments with, I could raw bench 500 close grip. I could train with 205 with 80 pound of chain, drop and do ballistic benching.
Right.
So I had a lot of other guys do it, and that's what it came to.
Right.
And Romanoff, one high came up to it, and he said, that's what the Soviet, you know, and did it the same way through other lifts. But if you take a ball and you drop a ball, how high is it bounce? If I throw it down, it bounces out. That elasticity of the ball caused that ball to bounce. That's
right.
Its energy. And the elasticity in your connective tissue, ligaments and tendons and so forth, causes me to jump higher. That's why you do depth jumps. Everyone does plyometric training. They jump off boxes. A lot of people don't realize about 32 inches for most people is a limit for explosive strength. As you raise boxes very high, it builds absolute strength. And the reason is optimization phase, as you fall greater distance, it's slower to rebound off the bottom.
Yeah.
If you lower a heavier weight slower, that's my point, see, about training. You want to lower only 40% of your potential. You just can't keep slowing the weight down. You have no stretch reflex.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure. Yeah, it makes sense.
Can I mention something? Also, I did experiments with top 10 squatters. That's all I got. And we did Circumax, near max weights. We did speed strength weights. And I could sit on a box and stay there for 8 seconds and get up to the same speed with a fairly heavy weight, a near max weight, that I did just doing regular box holds.
Yeah.
Dave Tate was super explosive. Now you know Dave. Dave was super explosive. And he could outsquat me by 15 pounds, and he was 308, and I was 235. So I was probably proportionally stronger, but Dave was more explosive.
Right.
And anyhow, Dave could stay down for 5. The more explosive you are, you're going to dissipate your stretch reflex quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
But I could stay down for 8. So you go, well, who cares? Why do you say that, Lou? Because if I'm on a football field on a long snap,
no doubt,
box squats can create that explosive power after 8 seconds.
No doubt.
That's one.
That's interesting. That's great. That's great. That's
a good okay. point. I mean, a lot of people go, well, why does this guy do this stuff? Like, my mind thinks all the time.
Yeah, that's obvious.
I have to make someone better. I have to. That's what my life is.
Well, that's what, you know, and that's evident by, you know, all the success that you've had, as well as all the people that you've mentored. You know, a lot of my staff members have come and visited or seen you speak, and all come back to saying the same thing, you know, how giving you are of your knowledge and your time. And I know that's fantastic. There's a couple things I always do in these, I know, like you said, I agree, you know, the book of the month type thing. That's not me. Give me a book that you would say is a must read for any strength coach.
If they think I'm doing the right thing, and I think I'm doing the right thing, because I wrote a book review for Dr. Verfashansky. I did super training seminars with Mel. You know, Dr. Zorczyzewski says I'm 99% on is a practice science of strength training. It's an easy book to read.
Yep.
And if you read Accommodation, All the things that's in that book, that, you know, like the dynamic method, anyone can read about. Like people say, I read Super Training. Nowhere in Super Training does it tell you how to do the dynamic method. Does it? It doesn't tell you how many lifts you do. It does not tell you. What rest intervals, it does not tell you how often. See, that's what I did. I mean, this has been 32-year odyssey that I've been doing this.
Right.
And that's how I came up with these things. But when I read that book, that is what made me think, yes, this is it. Secondly, I think the science of force training.
Yep.
I would, and then thirdly, loading is the key. I would go to managing the training of the weightlifter.
Mm-hmm.
These are all, that's a sore spot. But and then I would get Super Training. You know, Super Training is a freaking double PhD book.
Yeah.
It's a great book. I mean, that's why I went with Mel. But people, I watched intelligent people in the audience just stare at the man. They had no idea what he's talking about.
Oh, it's not an easy one to get through. I've done it.
Yeah, and I know you being a football guy, you're probably crazy. And I was crazy. We're all crazy. If you're in sport, we all got the same personality. And I'm doing a seminar with Mel in Vegas. It's supposed to start at 8 o'clock. He don't show. 65 people, most of them overseas, paying like $400 some bucks.
Oh, wow.
So I said, well, I guess I better start. So I just run up. I'm used to, I've spoke 9 hours straight. So I start talking. 9:15, Mel breaks in the door. He's got his wife, you know, in a wheelchair. He just pushes her off, runs straight up in front of me, and starts talking. Just runs right in front of me, and he just starts talking to the audience, like, you know, and everybody's looking at him, like, we were good friends, and the man was very eccentric. So I'm sitting there, you know, just kind of laughing about this.
Yeah, right.
And he goes on about a minute. He goes, I tell a lot of people this story because I think it's very, very important. And as smart as Mel was, this hit me in the mouth. Mel says, you never train memory. And I'm saying, yep, that's for pussies.
That's right.
He goes, you never train maximally. I go, wait a minute, that's what I've done all my life. Maybe that's why I have arms and tore everything off. Because you train optimally. That's the key. Optimally.
Right.
That's why I think football teams run their kids to the ground. You know, they'll run their kids to the ground to the point, I'd rather have a fresh team than a worn-out team.
Right. I agree on that.
But, I mean, harder's not always better. And I was guilty of it for years. It's just late 90s.
I agree 100% with that.
Yeah, it hit me in the face. Gee, Mel, why didn't you tell me this 40 years ago?
That's right.
I watched his train all the time.
That's right.
He thought everyone was out of their mind, but he really thought what he had going on.
Well, that's such a hard balance because, you know, I know I fight with that internally with my own programming, that you've had success with maybe more volume that you would like to do, but it's perpetual. You know, you have success with that. You run 31 tens, well, you feel like you need to do that every year, you know, because you had that 1 year success. And I know that's an internal fight for me, but I would agree with you 100% that we overtrain, no doubt.
You know, I realize different people could do so much training and others can't. The more gifted athletes don't have to do as much, although you got to keep them injury free.
That's right.
But some people do an enormous amount of work to be good,
that's right.
Others don't have to do very much.
That's right.
So you can really wear down. And a coach has to train people like they are. If they're extroverts, you've got to let them be that way. If they're introverts, that's the way it is. You know, you can't fire up an introvert. You just can't.
Sure.
You can't calm down an extrovert.
That's right. That's right.
And you notice the extroverts are always in the quick positions.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Run out, you know, the linebackers, the ends.
Yeah, I deal with a lot of those guys.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
What if there is there a quote that you live by, or is there a quote that you have hanging in the gym there that this sums up Louis Simmons?
Well, okay, I got one quote, and it's this one: read a book.
Say that again.
You know, coach, read a book. That's number one. Well, yeah, I got quotes. One of my use a lot: when you go to war, you go to kill, not to get killed. That means don't overtrain. And I'm definitely a guy who wants you to train.
Yeah.
You have, if you squat 1,100. And in my gym, your ball players are all model athletes. They should all be able to do what the other players did. So if I got a guy who squats 11, and both guys, I'll be able to do that 45,000 pounds of hypers, and I'll be able to inverse curls and pull sled for 10 trips with 400 pounds or something.
Right.
Okay, and also, choose a ball and choose a sword. My gym's private. And one of my favorite moves is Shogun Assassin.
Yeah.
And you know the Shogun thinks his assassin is going to kill him, so he sends the ninjas in to kill him. But his wife's in there, and they cut her all up. And she had a bad dream and told him, so I've had a bad dream. Says, a dream is just a dream. So he hears the ruckus. He runs in, and they're going, she's dying. And she got Daggero, the baby, there. And she said, my bad dream has come true. And she says, you have to take care of Daggero. And she reaches up to Daggero, and just there's blood right down his face. The kid's like 6 months old. And so the next scene, and then she dies. So the next scene, he's in a ceremonial robe, and he's sitting there, and he takes his sword, and he sticks it in the ground. He takes a pretty ball, and he sits it over here. It says, Dagro, I know you can't understand my words, but you must choose. If you choose the ball, you'll join your mother in death. If you choose the sword, you'll join me in the road to vengeance. So Dagro goes up, almost sets his ball, touches the sword, up he goes. And so he's on the road to vengeance.
That's awesome.
So if you want to come to my gym, you better choose a sword and get the hell out.
That's awesome.
And guys think I'm crazy because I'm 65 years old. I can do twice as much as half of them. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, what's next for you this year, Coach? What do you got working? I know you got some certifications that you got out right now and obviously all the products, but what's your 2014 look like?
I've got a jump book. It should have already been out. We had a little bit of trouble getting it published. I got a jump book over 300 pages, and I'd like to say it's the best jump book I've ever seen because I have books that you can't buy.
Right.
From Holden, and you can't buy them. And so this book is all color, is covering everything, spatial exercise. I used to ask a lot of people overseas, is there a book of exercise? They said, no, I have a book of exercise. I have a million exercises.
Right.
And one of those things will get you strong. That, I just come out with inverse curl. If you haven't heard about it, the boy that went from 7 to the 800 stand on a box in a year and 3 months, he can do on a poor man glued him on our DV, on our tape, on our website, he does 9 3/4 reps at 330 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, 130 pound guy can barely do one.
Yeah.
This guy does 9 3/4 reps. So touch his chest, you know, hands behind his back.
Yeah.
Real deal. So that's big. I also have a hip machine that goes with it. And then I have a book. After we get the jump book out, I have at least 400 pages book on explosive training for all sports. The grappling chapter is 153 pages.
Oh, wow.
I got about a 40 page for nutrition. How should athletes train? You know, are you an endurance athlete, a power athlete? How should you eat and how should you eat to monitor your training? And then, of course, everything on all sports. I mean, I had a 70-10 shot putter. I've had all kinds of people here. 210 discus. You know, all kinds of people come.
Yeah.
Just one. It's not like I had 20 of them. I had one.
Absolutely. They should just go to the website then to be able to order all that?
Yeah. I want to bring up, too, I can't mention names, but I had a girl try to qualify for the heptathlon for
yep.
6 years. She's 26 years old. Coach tells me, and I'll tell you this because I'm not listening, said she's average. But she tries hard. Oh, I got immediately mad. This is the first day I ever met him. And so she never qualified for ever. I had her 9 weeks. She broke all her records. In the previous year, she broke two, first one in March. And then another one had five fractures. And by December, she broke all of her records from the 60, the hurdles, to the shot all the way through. Took 2 seconds off her 300. She went from 2.8 to 2.2 in the 800. And she qualified for the Nationals. It's all about power training. It was doing exactly what I told you because my stat guy, Joe, he took her stats, 20% barbell, 80% spatial. Because you talk about posterior chain, if that's your problem, well, I'm going to work on your posterior chain. Squatting may not do that, you see.
Sure.
I mean, you may have bad form and a lot of tall athletes have trouble. So I just go straight to the glutes, the hips, the hamstrings.
Right.
And the calves. So that's all I did before. And a lot of repetition. Night for strength endurance for running at length of race, she would do a rep a second, a belt squat machine. Averages 60 reps in 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Take rest interval, get her heart rate back down, do it again until we work our way up and then slowly but surely add bits of weight.
That's a good idea.
And way back, I told you when I took the kid from 1047 to 1017 in a belt squat, when he came there, he did 12 reps. He slowed down so much, you know, that I made him exercise for 12 seconds. For the 100. He did 12 reps in 12 seconds of 45-pound plate. In 9 weeks, he did 12 reps in 12 seconds of 3 45-pound plates.
Really?
That equated straight to taking the, 3 tenths
of
time.
Yeah. You can see the common thread there, actually.
That's right. It's a common thread. And lots of reverse hypers and, you know, lots of power walking with the sled and
right.
lots of jumping.
Wow, wow.
I got a guy, John Curry, freshman year in the Big Ten. He ran. He went to Minnesota as a linebacker. He went there and he ran as a linebacker, 4.6 240, 38 vertical. He got hurt. They caught him. He comes here. I train him. I got him here about 5 months. The guy could squat 800 now.
Wow.
And he had a 495 deadlift, 700, raw bench 490. He goes to Houston and Chuck Taylor's run 4.42 and 44 vertical.
Wow.
By the system, I'm telling you, it's in that explosive power training book. It's the jumps. I had 8.32 deadlifter John Stafford, and he would jump on a 36-inch box with 70-pound dumbbells for sets of five. And he was 6 foot tall, 8.32 deadlift. He could jump up and touch 11.6 at our gym.
Wow.
So that's and he had no athletic ability, but he was powerful. That's all I can't – I tell people – I can't make a football player. I can't make a fighter. I can't make a runner, but I can make them run faster, lift. I can do all that. It's your job as a coach to make them better.
Hey, I agree with that 100% as well.
I know nothing about it. You know.
Hey, I wish we knew. I wish I knew more. Right? I wish I could handle both.
Yeah, me too.
Well, Coach, it's easy to see why you're the best, man, and I truly appreciate you coming on and sharing this. I've got 2 pages of notes right here, and I got to go back to go back through and pick out some more information from there. But I know everybody's going to get a ton out of this. I'll make sure to link up the website. Is there anything else, anywhere else that you want me to send coaches to find more about you or your products or speaking engagements, whatever?
I guess our website. I'll be honest with you. I don't travel anymore. Maybe a couple times this year, I might go to Illinois and Tennessee, but that's about it. I'm too banged up.
Yeah.
I mean, I was top 10 for 30 years and USB, I believe, for 37, and it took its toll.
I hear you.
Yeah, it took its toll. So what I would rather stay here and experiment with my guys, and they bring me an athlete right now. Like, it just so happens now these MMA guys are coming in.
Yeah.
And which is crazy. They're in 3 and 4 weeks. They can't believe the difference. I mean, the puncher power. We don't do anything wrong. It's all in the air.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, we're good at that.
That's such a fun sport, too. Fun guy, a group of guys to work with.
Let me give you a tip for all the coaches that train a lot of women. You know, you got a lot of women, their knees are all pulled together, right? And, you know, they got weak groin muscles and they got weak hip muscles. If you have them pull slap.
I lose you? You there, Coach?
Keep on tipping. Okay. Are you there?
I got you now. I lost you for a second.
You carry this med ball, and when you walk like a pregnant woman. Your knees go out to the side. It eliminates that posture.
Really?
It eliminates it fast. So what have I done? I just eliminate ACL tears in women.
Wow.
I've done it.
That's a good idea.
It's sick. It's crazy. So
it's a really good idea.
Yeah. I want to mention something about power walking, people. I've had guys call me because, I mean, I'm telling you, you send me an athlete. I don't want him no more, but send me one. I'll knock 3 tenths off. I got a boy in my gym. He's 170. He's 175. High school. He ran a 5.240.
Yeah.
6 months here. He's 225 pounds. He goes to Penn State and runs a 4.740.
Wow. That makes a difference.
Yeah, it's all power walking. And people say, how can power walking make you run faster? Because every step is a start.
Yeah.
And you sledge a jerk every time you step. It's a jerk, jerk, jerk. Every step is a start. But what does it also do for pure sprinters? It eliminates deceleration. Yeah. That step is as powerful as the first. That's why we do it. And it built. I mean, why do men outrun women? Women are just as graceful, but
right.
Men are more powerful. See, that's my theory is. I mean, I'm in a biomechanics. I might have sprint coaches come in and help.
Yeah.
But my theory is, I make you so freaking powerful. I know a fight coach. He's a fight coach. You know, he's not a weight coach. He's a beat you down coach.
Right.
He goes, what a fighter needs is brute force. And if that doesn't work, he needs more brute force. Yeah. That comes from a fight coach.
Yeah. I carry over to a lot of sports, probably.
It carries over a lot. Yeah. Weightlifting's a funny sport. It's one of my pet peeves because I love the sport, but we're so bad at it. They'll tell you here in America, you don't have to be strong to be a weightlifter. Well, if that was true, why do you have weight classes?
Right.
Why don't women lift what men do? It's really sad.
I agree 100% with that.
Yeah.
With the power walking, how do you program that in?
Normally on our 2 days a week at least, or sometimes I come back. Like the guys for GPP, my gym's about a quarter mile around.
Okay.
You know, the whole building, something like. Okay. So they'll go around there a couple times.
Okay.
A couple plays, GPP. For power, they go 60 yards. I got this. This comes back from football. Guys going to the NFL, short sprints, 60 yards at a time. And whatever rest interval you need to recover, and you blow back.
Wow.
Long strides. And it goes like this. On Monday, like after a ball game, on Monday, heaviest weights. Maybe 6-8 trips. Like we'll say 4 plates. We'll just say 4 plates. On Wednesday, you drop down to 2 plates a quarter. You'll add trips. All right, Monday, it builds absolute strength. Wednesday, it builds strength endurance. On Friday, you know, before a game or, you know, like for us squatting or dead, it's either going to be a warm-up or restoration when you drop the weight again. So yeah. See, the weight goes down, down, down.
Yeah.
In America, everyone wants to go up, up, up.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to wave. Like I say, training is like the ocean, small waves and large waves. Has to be in waves. You can't continue to go forever. It just can't.
I like that. I'm going to use that one. Large waves. Well, Coach, I've used way more of your time than I thought I would, but you are the best. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing information, and definitely want to send people to your way, your website and the whole deal. And then I being up in Cincinnati, I'd love to come up and see you at some point if I could.
Well, all you got to do is call. I mean, you know, that's what I'm here for. I don't go anywhere.
Yes, sir.
My life's in my house and my gym. Back.
That's what my wife says.
I go home and I write and I come back here and we train.
That's what my wife says too.
Well, yeah. And I love to have people come here. I just, you know, the Melbourne Storm, people don't realize we're huge overseas in rugby. A team in the Premier League went 26-0 a few years back, used the system. Phil Richards, no, only team ever to go 26-0.
Wow.
You know, the Melbourne Storm, like I talked about, they come over and spend a long time. I just had a kid from Argentina, a rugby coach. You know, so, and then we had two Canadians. One was an ex-hockey player and ex-speed skater. And they got the job of this training the Russian speed skating team because it was ran by Koreans, and they ran them in the ground. They hurt everybody, and they went backwards. So the guys did it themselves for 6 months. They couldn't believe the progress they made. So somehow they got the job, and they could not believe it. They went back to breaking world records, and taking the kid was ranked fifth in the world to second right off the bat. So now they're coming back in. They're going to, you know, we're going to go through more stuff.
Wow.
That's what I like. I mean, that's how I like to be paid. I don't get any money, you know, but when I can keep someone from getting hurt, injured, and when you're a young child or young adult, make your progress. The window's small.
No
people don't realize it. It's small.
Well, shoot, when you've broken your back twice, I know that that's a passion of yours. Absolutely, you know.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, you know, you mentioned the system. You know, from a strength coach standpoint, from a football strength coach or a sports strength coach, what two products that you have? What two books? I mean, the Explosive Training DVD and book.
I would get Explosive Training and GPP.
And the GPP books that you have.
If I was going to have machines, I could take anybody in here, and I could take any coach or any athlete, and I can make them better just putting them on a few people. My bell squat, walk in the bell squat, you will not believe what your running speed does. If you have a bell squat by chance?
Yeah, absolutely.
Get a bell squat and start walking in it. All right? Matt Brown, if you count the cages of a bar, he uses 365 for 5 minutes. He walks, and you push out the side, build lateral speed.
Yeah.
If you walk in that bell squat and you tell me what happens, you're going to go, what? You cannot believe the power because it's all hip and glute. And you can see the bell squat was made for skaters, sprinters, skaters. You're skating, but you can do isometric poses in there, but you're breathing because you got the belt in.
Yeah.
It also acts as traction. It corrects pelvic tilt. I figured that out. But you just walk in place.
Yeah, I'm going to try that.
Huh. Put about 3 plates on, try to go 3 minutes. Get out. Be careful getting out.
Yeah.
It's the fastest way to make a kid strong I've ever seen.
Really?
But, you know, two 3 minutes bouts, it's like doing 5 squat workouts.
Huh.
All in your hips for athletes, then you're not taking any chance of hurting them, you know.
I'm going to give that a shot. I like that.
You recover quick from it. That's a good point.
Yeah,
and there's hypers.
Well, that's what I like with your power walking and your belt squat walking. I like the idea of that because you're right. The recovery part of it takes, you know, it's definitely training, but the recovery part of it's a lot easier.
Put a bar on your back, it takes a while to recover.
Yeah.
Someone's pulling down your neck all the time, it takes a while to recover. You know, something else, get in a belt squat, and I took this from Russian weightlifters. They had a belt squat machine with a cable device, you know, but they did high pulls.
Yeah.
Okay, so we do a lot of kettlebell power cleans and kettlebell high pulls while we do it. And it's deadlifts, straight leg deadlifts.
That's a good idea.
Try these are variations. You build up the hamstrings, the glutes, your kids run faster, and it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not rocket science on that
point. It's not rocket science. It's not.
No doubt. Well, Coach, I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much. And let me know if there's anything I can ever do for you as well.
Well, come visit me.
Absolutely.
Come visit me. Have fun.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Thanks so much.
All right.
Take
care. See you later.
Thank you. So a couple quick announcements before we let you go. all the links, as usual, will be posted down in the show notes from Coach Simmons' episode. So make sure you check that out. Also, check out strength-ondemand.com. Wanted to give you an inside look at Strength on Demand. Basically, what it is an online archive of strength and conditioning presentations from various clinics across the country. Top strength and conditioning coaches from all over, various topics. You can see, you know, week one here, Greg Cook, Cascazzotti, Alan Stein, head strength coach for the Buffalo Bills, Eric Ciano, Michelle Rockwell with nutrition, Coach Hicks there at Syracuse, and on and on and on. Up to 52 presentations for the year for 2013. Well worth the money, well worth the time. The great thing about it is that it saves you time from having to go all over the place. You're able to access this from your iPad, your iPhone, your web, your computer, and you can listen to it on your way into work in the mornings and all those types of things. So it's a great product. Know you'll enjoy it. Make sure you check it out, strength-ondemand.com. See you next week.